Hello everyone and welcome to JFG tonight. Sorry a little late, a minute or two, but I wanted to take pictures of my garden to update you guys about the state of the garden. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Today I'll be reviewing a Gab post by Andrew Tarba, who says, if you ever wanted to know what a libertarian society looks like, guess what? We're living in one. Drag queens grooming children, degeneracy on every TV show and movie, no borders, no law and order, porn in the hands of 10 years old, an epidemic of suicide and drug abuse, 18-year-old girls selling their bodies on the internet, multinational corporations doing whatever they want without any consequences, foreign nationals buying our farmland and running our Congress, on and on. I don't know what libertarians cry about all the time. We're living their vision right now. This is what end-stage cultural libertarianism looks like. Liberty without morality is degenerate, sinful slavery, and the wages of sin is death. The only true liberty is found in Jesus Christ, which is why when we take power, the cultural libertarianism ends and the state will be wielded to enforce and legislate biblical morality. I think it's very important to get this right, because the question, I think no one is questioning that America was great at some point in the past, and that at that point in the past it was religious. But if you get this wrong, and if you start thinking, therefore, if I force religion onto people, it will go the same way, you make the error of basically the error that correlation does not equal causation. It's not because something was the case in the past that by restoring it by force, by causing it again, you will recuperate the effects, the goodness of the past. I believe that there are two ways to interpret why America was great 100 years ago. And it's either that Christianity was imposed onto people and it worked well, or you can see it in another way. People flocked to Christianity naturally through a self-selection process. And if you don't reproduce that self-selection process properly, you will have Christianity without the goodness of it. And you will have ultimately a diluted Christianity and a diluted America. So I'll be laying out my thoughts on this. but it's important that Tarba understands what's wrong here. Because you can take a religious program and people naturally flock to it and it works. And then you impose it on people who aren't deserving of it. And suddenly it leads to something else totally. We'll be talking about this, but first I will be doing a garden update. I'm very proud of the progress of the garden. Everything is rolling smooth this year. I'm on automated watering every night. From 1 a.m. to 4 a.m. I rotate on different parts of the garden and I control them with my cell phone. It's all automated. The soil is moist. You know, last year when I was dipping my finger in the soil, I was worried because, oh my God, for a whole foot, it was relatively dry. This year, I just dip my finger in the soil and it's moist. I really like the automated watering I've been implementing. That's my greatest progress up to now. The raised bed is half complete. Look at this. I filled up to this level approximately 3 planks of wood. I filled it with bad soil, clay soil, and soil that is not loosened. And then on top of it, I've added compost, cow manure, and store-bought topsoil for gardens, all mixed together. And this leads to this beautiful black earth here. I think it's going to work, and I have it for 3 planks deep, so approximately I'd say a little more than 1 foot, a little less than 2 feet. I have my automated watering system just going around all of the rows and watering everything. Look at this beautiful parsley that I planted yesterday. Cilantro, all of this is also cilantro, planted yesterday. I have some lettuce here, I have a plant of basilic that's coming out here. I have a beet, that's a Swiss chard, rainbow Swiss chard coming out here. And here I have a mix of basilic plants and rosemary. You can see some here, here, and here. Oh, well, I'm in front of the rosemary, but here, right here, you can see beautiful little rosemary. Once this grows, I think if I take good care of the roots, they can survive many years. More in the raised bed, that's a row of beets that I've included. Those are basilic plants. This is some dill and some oregano. This is going to be awesome. Guy from V says, place a cam in his head to look out for wolverines. You want me to automate the wolverine scanning of my property? I think when you see a wolverine, you don't need an automated system to tell you that it's there. Huckleberry plants, that's a cousin of the blueberry. Look at this, I'm gonna get a lot of huckleberries this year. This is a plant that was given by a friend, and it seems that it won't survive the winter, so I have to collect the fruits and prepare the plants for the next winter. But it's impressively productive. We're at the beginning. I just planted this a week ago, and it's filled with fruits already, and it's going to produce more. I can't wait to taste this. I've never eaten huckleberry. That is, the photo is a little blurry, but that is our blackberry plant. I think that the whip of the blackberry plant may have died because it's not producing leaves, but I'll leave it there to see if it can produce some, but it seems to have taken back at the source of the blackberry here. Oh, that's a less blurry photo. It seems to have taken back more at the base, but it has abandoned the longer whip. That is a peach tree, just planted this year. It's starting to have healthy leaves. We'll see what it can do. But normally these trees, I think they like to be planted already, and they see the spring coming, and then they rarely perform very well in the year that you plant them. Inside the greenhouse, that's how it looks. Look at the soil. This is a soil that I haven't watered manually. It's a soil that gets watered every night during 1 to 4 a.m. And look at this, you can see the moisture. And those are very healthy Swiss chard. Last year, these Swiss chard were kind of weak. But since yesterday, they've taken back their color and they've taken back their position. So I guess they handled the transplantation shock, and now they are starting to grow. My garlic is looking good, so I have to wait. Basically, you count the number of leaves, and each leaf is a clove. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, perhaps 7, 8 with the small leaves inside. So my garlics are now at 8 cloves. I could harvest them soon, but I'll let them attain their full growth for the summer, and I'll see how big they have become then. This is another place besides some garlic, some Swiss chard here and here. Budong Kadok says, JF, have you heard of permaculture or food forest style of gardening? Do you have any thoughts about it? I think it's overblown, it's bullshit, partly. I think people are selling you basically the watching of their YouTube video with this, and it's I've listened to all of them, and I've listened to the whole food forest thing. The thing is, there's nothing better than rows, well-organized rows with strategies to control herbs and weeds. I mean, you can go the food forest way, but you're gonna be all lost. You're going to be, it's not my thing. It's not super productive. You lose productivity. If your soil is not already good, it's going to be more effort. Mama JF is here. I don't know if she had an opinion on permaculture.
Oh yes, we went to see a friend last week.
Yes, we went to see a guy who's intense in permaculture.
Yes, but he said the new thing is the new thing is regenerative
Yeah.
agriculture.
And basically, their so-called principle that would be at the heart of their philosophy is, oh yeah, you need to be sustainable. It's like, oh yeah, well, thank you. I need to be sustainable. Now, what else? Like, everything has to be sustainable. My car has to sustain itself from point A to point B. My computer has to be sustainable so I can drive and so I can stream with my computer. Everything always has to be sustainable, and it's always been a goal of agriculture.
Yes. Hey, I started to read the book I gave you for your birthday, Le.
Yeah.
You didn't?
You gave me that book for my birthday, and
Yes.
you read it.
Yes.
That sounds like it.
Yes. And they are so annoying. They keep saying everybody needs to do permaculture because otherwise everybody will die.
Yeah,
And
the
it's
end of
so
the
annoying.
world. They don't know. They don't know what the real end of the world is.
Oh no. But yeah, it's like they're threatening you, Le. Like, my God, calm down.
Absolutely. Jack Acid says he's right. Buying soil may not be possible next year. I'm certainly prepared for multi-year shortages. So I have so much fertilizer. I might have fertilizer at this point for 5 to 10 years from now. Because I have this big bucket of fertilizer pouches, and it's like I use one fertilizer pouch maybe per year. And there's so many pouches in there, I don't even know, but I probably have enough fertilizer to go on for 5 to 10 years. I'm a fertilizer hoarder. The shortage basically is because of me. So I know that the leftists won't like it, the environmentalist. Mama JF, did you have anything else to say?
Yes, guys, look, I want to show something.
You want to show your collection? Oh my God. Eggs, eggshells, cleaned, not humid, so they don't go bad. They are super clean and kept. This is our eggshells for a full year.
Yes,
Wonderful.
I'll clean them one by one because otherwise they smell bad.
What's the project with eggshells?
I don't know. How do you use them? Because
I thought that your original idea is this is going to be a weapon against
Yes,
slugs.
because they said use them. If you use them, you won't have slug. But I don't know what to do with them.
Well, I don't think it's going to be super efficient. You know, you will need a lot of those to keep slugs from walking around a plant. There's always going to be a path for the slug.
Yeah, like I was digging in the earth, Le, the other day,
I
and there
bought
was
something else that I think will be great. Slugs be gone. Eco ultra killer.
No, not this. I saw a YouTube video, it says it's evil.
It's evil.
I don't remember why, Le, but
It's
it's.
evil for the slug or for us?
Oh, I don't even remember why, but it said that it was bad for something for the. Either for environment or for something else.
I don't think it is. It's a pretty ecological product. It only targets slugs.
Melo, what are we gonna do with all my eggshells?
Well, put them in the compost.
No, but do you put them like around the greenhouse or like
No.
around each plant?
Around each plant, I think it's what they do.
What?
Yeah.
If somebody know what to do with this, like. You can tell me.
All right. If somebody knows, send the info my way. Because I don't want MamaJF to access it directly. I want to filter. Because if you guys are launching us on a project that takes hours to just put the eggshells, I'm going to hide it from MamaJF. Dark Urza says, JF, crush the eggshells and put them in a bowl into the oven. After you bake something, it kills the germ and later adds calcium back into the soil. Yeah, I mean, if your goal is just to compost it for the calcium, you just put it in the compost. You don't need them clean. The reason MamaJF had to clean them is we wanted to have per eggshells kept. And so she every week she would collect the eggshells that we had amassed and she would dip them in water and soap. And we end up with this huge collection of eggshells. I mean, no matter the use that we do for them, it's going to be useful. It's great to have eggshells like this, even as just a fertilizer for calcium. It's going to be great. So the garlic and Swiss chard section doing good. That's at the entrance of the greenhouse. I made some beets here, and then here, those are all pickling cucumber. They've been extremely productive last year, so I decided to produce a lot of them this year. They are beautiful cucumber from the garden, you know, garden type cucumber, not the elongated type that you can get at the grocery store. And as you can see, my new system is landscape fabric with a little rectangle cut where I want to plant the plant. I can't wait to see what will be the productivity of this, because I feel like I've really found the solution to weeds. My greenhouse was an anarchic jungle of weeds. I mean, I didn't even care. Now, there are advantages to letting the weeds there, but I was getting tired. I was getting tired of, well, first, the weeds do consume some of the soil's goodness. And I felt like my garden was getting stolen its nutrients. Now I'm going to have just the plant that I want, and I'm sure there will be very little weeds. You might have some that come from below here and get into the rectangle, but I'm going to have certainly 99% of the weeds that I would have had, they won't be there. Because the whole rows that are made of wood chips here are all covered underneath the wood chips. They're all covered with landscape fabric that weeds cannot pass through. So I cannot wait to see the result of this year. This year and you can see the automated watering line here. That's a dripping soaker hose passing close to the plants. So those were my tomato plants. So those will be beefsteak tomatoes and indeterminate cherry red tomatoes. This is a line I've been successful this year because a friend gave us excellent seeds of beans, but I had been extremely unsuccessful with beans in the last few years. But I think starting from the right seed, that was the great idea. And with the right seed for this soil, it's going extremely well. We are only in June and my plants are basically already producing beans here. And normally I would have waited up to end of August to see some kind of maybe one bean or two bean. These plants are producing already in June 5 or 6 beans each. So I think it's going to be productive. A line of beets here. They're very red. I don't know if it's too red. I would like them to be a little greener, but I just transplanted them, so I think they're going to find the energy in the soil and build beautiful leaves. Some more bean plants here. Bean. You can see so many flowers emerging from the beans. DK Shadow says, are these magic beans? No, they're just regular beans that you eat. They are yellow beans. Pineapple Platypotamus says, the system is allowing Tim and his buddies to meet federal agents and police and make friends with them all, kind of self-defeating of them. He says, anybody see Team Cast got swatted for the 9th time last night? Yeah, I mean, I think at this point he's getting regularly swatted, and At some point, you have to tell the police, look, at this point, I'm going to ask for, or maybe go see a court and say, look, we've been swatted 9 times. I think it's starting to be time to not invoke emergency circumstances. It's not an emergency if it happens every week. We have some Brussels sprout broccoli here. We'll see how they do in this new environment. Brussels sprout broccoli. Here's a line of some more tomatoes that continues through the greenhouse, everything being watered automatically. Some beautiful broccoli here. I have some zucchini showing up here. And this is a line of a kale plant that survived the winter. So I've cut the extremity because it was already building flowers for this year. I wanted to maximize its production of leaves. It's a single kale plant, survived the winter, and it seems to be on its way to produce a lot of leaves because it's very high. Some corn, I don't know how they're going to do because people have been telling me that corn transplantation is not a good idea, but I wanted to have a few of them to see can they sustain the transplant in this new greenhouse context with automated watering, with proper handling of so many other things that I've learned to handle. How does the corn transplantation work? Pineapple Platypotamus says, no, JF, Tim made a great point. Tim doesn't want the cops to always think it's fake because it may be real one day. They could be in danger with cops standing down. Yeah, sure. But then it's not news. Then it's the way you chose to live, you know? Then don't annoy us with a count of how many times you've been swatted. Because you chose that lifestyle. By the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey su chats. Super chats on Odyssey are my favorite platform for supporting the show. And alternatively, you can also use Entropy to send super chats. The link to Entropy is in the description below. That's another cucumber plant in my corn part of the greenhouse. Zucchini plant here, broccoli, cucumber, beans. And that's my row of strawberries doing better than ever. Strawberries seem to really like the addition of cow manure that I've done this year. And the leaves, you can see that they are extremely healthy and they have prepared plenty of flowers already. Each of those will become strawberries. This is another line of some garlic here and beans, some sage. This is a line of beets that I've planted this morning. This is a line of tomatoes planted, I believe, yesterday or this morning. Tomatoes. This is beets planted this morning. And this is the zucchini corner. They are starting to recover from the transplant of 2 or 3 days ago. And they've been sending out flowers and growing and standing straight. So they seem to be happy with the cow manure also. And that's what I have left also to plant in the greenhouse, a lot of beet. Tomatoes, a pepper plant. That's our new peach tree, another one. Didn't really take life fully, but I think it's waiting to get integrated to the new soil. The raspberry is doing awesome. The blueberry is doing awesome. The cherry tree is extremely healthy. Look at this, cherries popping out. Beautiful. I guess each of these will become a cherry here. So we would have just in this particular zoom, we might have 6, 7 cherries. Rhubarb's doing relatively healthy, but one of them has been planted this year, this one, and this one is from last year. Our black currants are extremely productive. They've been productive in the last few years. Here they are, black currants all across the branch. Very, very productive black currants here. And you can see here the living shoot. That is a growth from this year. It's the whole shoot that comes from a more brown branch. And so when the branch is brown, you know it's been lignified last year. But this is this year's growth. So they really grow fast. And we're still in June. That's our new currant, red currant plant. That's our hazelnut. And I was looking at these here. Is it possible that this is going to be a hazelnut? It might be my first year where I see a hazelnut being produced. I'm not sure though. Is it just a feature of the branch or is it how hazelnuts are born? I see it here also. It looks to me like these might grow into hazelnut. I'm really fascinated about this one because I never thought in my life that I would see how a hazelnut stems from the tree. And look at this beautiful field of potatoes and onions. So I have green onions, yellow onions, red onions, all watered through a soaker hose. And potatoes. Let's have a zoom on the onions. Here you can see an onion from last year that has survived, and the red onions from this year that are starting to grow. It's looking good. Dino Legovic says, may you have a hazelnut this year, JF. They are my favorite. Well, I hope so. I'm fascinated at the idea that you can grow hazelnut. I don't even know how a hazelnut looks like because I don't think I've been eating hazelnuts. I'm sure if I would see it, I would have already seen this in grocery stores, but I don't quite know how they look like by heart. Tottle Grimm says, how much land do you have? Somewhere between half an acre and an acre. Plenty to build still. I still haven't maximized the use of the space. You know, the raised bed that I have, I could build 8-10 raised beds like this, and if I just chop some trees, I would definitely have the space to do so. So I don't think space will be a limiting factor ever. That's another onion coming out of the ground. That's our pear tree. Look at this, beautiful and long. The growth this year is approximately this, because I think the brown stops here. And you can see the new branches being born here. Again, another pear tree. I think this branch is becoming too big. I'm going to have to cut it because it's becoming bigger than the master branch. So it's a poor investment of resources for this tree. But for now, I'm letting it go because it's probably getting a lot of sun and it's probably getting a lot of energy for the rest of the tree. And I don't feel ready to, I find it so beautiful, I don't feel ready to cut it out. The black walnuts are out, they have finally started producing leaves. Another black walnut here, lots of leaves, but they tend to grow in the wrong direction. I guess I'm gonna have to straighten it up this year and attach it to a bamboo stick and just make sure that it grows in the right direction. That is another pear tree, apple tree. This is great. I mean, look at this. I planted these trees. They were half the bamboo stick. And 3 years later, here they are. One bamboo stick plus another bamboo stick almost. And you can see the growth of this year starts here. So it's brown below and it's green above. So that is the growth that they can accomplish during the spring. These hardy trees, they like to grow at the early season because they use the end of the summer to strengthen the wood, to strengthen their lumbar parts and to transform everything they want to keep for next year into lumbar parts. And so the growth that you see is mostly June and July. That's why we don't want to add fertilizer to these bad boys after the 1st of July. Here we have a plum tree sending branches all in all directions. Plum tree also, these are becoming more and more big and more ambitious in their spreading. And the Mama JF Burdock experiment amazingly has been working. So here we can see one burdock here coming out of the soil. So this is all happening in a trash that Mama JF has set up. So a trash can filled with soil and then covered with wood chips. And we have one burdock coming out here, one coming out here, and one burdock coming out here. So Mama JF, the plan with burdocks, from what I understand, is to cultivate the roots of it. So she wants a trash can where the roots will grow into the trash can, and it's going to be easier to harvest than to dig in a full soil. So the burdock experiment, amazingly, has been working. And finally, we have the inside, which is my last. This is my last container left of plants inside, getting raised by the pink lights. It's tomatoes and peppers, and I'm gonna have some space in the greenhouse where I can finally plant those last plants. And this year I'm doing something for the first time, which is a replanting, a second wave of planting, because I realize I have space left. Once I complete the raised bed, I'm gonna have a space left that needs filling, and so I've planted lettuce and herbs and spices so that I can get more of those, because parsley, cilantro, there's never enough of this. DK Shadow says, pink light, you want your plants to turn out LGBT activist? No, the pink is just the it's just the frequency that the when you light a plant with white light, you waste a lot of energy. As it turns out, they use mostly the pink frequency to grow, and the rest, some of it is useful. I don't know the details, but you can see the way root farms are made, for example. They have some specialized pink LED lights, and they have some specialized purple LED lights, and then they have white lights. So there's a reason to have white lights, but it's not what the plants need. The plants are fully happy under exclusively pink and purple lights. Mama JF, what's up?
Hey JF, I'm so proud of you. Wow, it's really beautiful.
And I'm proud of your burdock experiment. You were daring in this experiment and it paid off.
Yeah, I think it's a really hardy plant.
Yeah, it seems to have resisted even your use of very heavy soil on it and a very heavy amount of wood chips.
Yes.
It found its way through.
Yes, well, DF, you're really a real man now.
Well, I was a man before. I mean, I've been working on this greenhouse for 3 years now.
Yes, I'm really proud of you, DF.
Silver Spider sends $10. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, hey JF, I've been reading on the origins of the species up to chapter 6, which focuses on the absence or rarity of transitional species. I was watering my Venus flytraps and I'm still puzzled as to where the transition happened to make such a weird plant. Can you explain this process? Well, Venus flytrap. Let's see. Venus flytrap. I don't know what that is. Okay, so basically it's the carnivorous plant. Well, so his question is, evolutionarily, in terms of transition, how do you get there? Well, the first question you have to ask is, this is a plant of which family? So you have to find the scientific name for it. So the scientific name is, let me, Dionaha muscipula. So then you do Tree of Life, Dionaha muscipula. Well, I don't have a Tree of Life reference, but maybe in this scientific article they might have it. Or maybe they'll have a good Wikipedia article about it. Okay, so there you go. You have the full evolutionary structure that leads to a Dionaea. So the first thing is Droseraceae, a family of carnivorous flowering plants. So you don't want to stop there, because there are 180 species, and they define them as all, you know, they're all pretty carnivorous. So you want to go up in the order. The Caryophyllales. The Caryophyllales is a diverse and heterogeneous order of flowering plants that include the cactus, the carnations, the amaranth, the ice plants, the beets, and carnivorous plants. Many members are succulent, having fleshy stems or leaves. The betalain pigments are unique in plants of this order and occur in all of its families except Caryophyllaceae and Mulliganaceae. So Caryophyllaceae was this, the one we were talking about. Caryophyllales. Caryophyllaceae, no. So that means, here's the first answer to your question. You get this red aspect because it's in the family of beets. So there's a first very clear answer. This species, being part of the family of beets, all of them produce a red pigment, and this plant simply took the direction of expressing its red pigment in its mouth. Now, I know this is not what you want to hear. You want to hear, how does it get to this carnivorous aspect? Well, let's continue our research. So, then you have to ask yourself, so here's another cousin of the plant, the Venus flytrap that you're talking about. Now you're going to start seeing what's happening. This family of plant, this order of plant, had developed spikes as part of its cactus lifestyle. So it was the genes were there. The genes were not far to create this. And so they were also not far. Let me pull again on another window so that we can truly compare the things here. Look at this. Doesn't that make you think of this? Now, I'm not saying it's homologous, but I'm saying it was really not hard for this life form to evolve spikes. And this life form has evolved spikes like this in its Venus flytrap, and spikes like this in its cactus descendants. We would have to look at the molecular events that lead to the production of spike and the molecular constitution of those spikes to determine if they are homologous. Homologous meaning they would have come from an evolutionary route that already existed. Or perhaps the cactus invented the spike on their side, and then the Venus flytrap invented the spikes on their side. So now we are starting to have a very good answer. We know why the color is there. We know why the spikes are there. It's because this life form was prepared to produce spike, and perhaps had to produce spike in other contexts than fly catching. Then there's the question of the mouth. How do you get this shape? Well, I want to see how their seeds look like. So this is Mollugginacea, a very close cousin. And what seems to be their flower, I guess, here. Their flower is structured in a way that you could very well see the evolutionary transition between this and this. This is just an opened appendage that looks very much like a flower. So you can make it in your head, you know, and maybe you're not going to be satisfied by this. And I don't know that this is the flower. I would have to know more about the carnivorous plants. Do they have independent flowers? But you can very well think that evolutionarily, there was a life form that was somewhat cactus-like, somewhat beet-like. It was producing these appendages that it was using for reproduction first and foremost. Jack Acid says it's not the flower. So still, it could be a different appendage, but you can always recycle the genetic recipe that you apply for flowers and make something that's flower-like, but that's not a flower beside. But that's interesting. It's good to know. So the plant apparently has this carnivorous appendage and flowers. So then we have the redness induced by the cousin aspect with the beets, the little spikes here induced by their relationship with the cactus. And the mouth form is very easy to imagine as an appendage that has evolved multiple times, by the way, from nuts to flowers and fruits. Basically, every family of plant has something like this. A two-sided appendage that will either release a flower or, in this case, close onto a fly. So you can easily imagine the evolutionary tree from there that will lead to the Venus flytrap. That is basically what a biologist does, because you ask me a question that I didn't know, because I'm not a specialist of plants. I never research carnivorous plants, but you've seen the logic that I've laid out here in the last 10 minutes. That's what you would do to do biology research and to get to know a field that you don't know much about. You process by closest cousins, and you're always going to find something. Stephen Robinson says, JF, if the spikes of the cactus, which I assume are there for protection purpose, caught insects by accident, and as a result the animal decomposed on the plant, could evolution have caused the plant to digest the meat and develop methods to catch the food? There is this... I think you may have, Stephen Robinson, you may have talked to me in a super chat or something once about proto-carnivorous plant. The idea that a plant may not have an active mechanism to trap an animal, but that something like raspberry spikes could very well just catch a deer accidentally. And let's say that the deer is kind of tired and almost about to die. He gets caught in a spike of raspberry plants. He dies there. He may have died like 5 foot further if the plant wasn't there. But somehow the fact that the plant had spikes and the fact that it was there, it has basically captured a deer that otherwise wouldn't have died there. And then it can spend, I mean, how many years can you survive as a plant on a dead body of a deer? Maybe 100 years. I mean, there's energy in there. It's crazy. So yes, it's totally possible. You can see accidental trapping as perhaps a first evolutionary step. And once your specialty as a plant is basically to kill flies and feed from them, it's only a matter of time before the evolutionary pressure make you more and more efficient at catching them, and more and more efficient at digesting them. So it's like, at first, maybe the flies were just falling on the floor and maybe just adding just a little bit of nutrient. And then eventually, well, the plant may have found different ways to to keep the fly closer and closer until eventually it's basically a fly trap. Licks Megamin's Balloon Nut sends a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, my wife and I spent a long time discussing your childhood stories. A couple of things. One, typically we raise concerns with our leaders in private. Your teacher should have mentioned this. Two, maybe your aunt was busy and didn't have time to teach you to mash potatoes. All the best. Well, I'm not frustrated at my aunt for keeping me from mashing the potatoes. When I told this story, I'd rather live with the frustration of this event. I'd rather live with, okay, there's a problem in society because she wasn't opened enough to believe that it was worth it for a 4 or 5 year old to mash potatoes. So the way I see it is, I'm not in a fury against God or against the universe because of this, but I don't want to forgive or forget. I want to keep this frustration, this little kind of root of it, this proto-frustration. I want to keep it going because it's a good motivator. It can only lead me to do good in the world. I want to fix the world for children to be experiencing the best lives they can, including opportunities for learning. So I know that there's a thing in Christianity about forgiveness and about, oh, your heart will be black if, you know, if you keep this hate inside. I'm very different from this. I keep the hate inside. Hate is my main motivator. You know, once I was in a private discussion with David Duke before a show, and he, and you know how David Duke is relatively old, but he looks in good shape for an old man. He looks like more healthy than his age, than the average man from his age. And he said, Jeff, he said very naively and in a very loose manner, like, Jeff, I found the cure to old age. Do you want to know what's the trick to remain young forever? And I said, okay, tell it to me. What's the trick? Not that I care so much. And he said, hate! David Duke, who has, you know, the softest tone of all, and he's always presentable and always super respectful and gentle and kind, he really got close to the mic and he said, hate! I laughed my ass off. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I live well with hate. I live well with a frustration that's the root of your motivation for going forward. And so I don't have personal animus against my aunt. She probably didn't know better and didn't have a sufficient understanding that a child can benefit from an experience of error and learning from his own errors. But I don't want to get rid, I don't want to fully forget this story because it's a problem. It needs to be fixed. All right, let's talk about Andrew Tarba. LBRT sends 10 LBC. Thank you so much, bro. Andrew Tarba was claiming, and I already read at the beginning of the show, but I can reread it again. He was saying, if you ever want to know what a libertarian society looks like, guess what? We're living in one. Drag queens, grooming children, degeneracy on every TV show and movie, no borders, no law and order, porn in the hands of 10 years old, an epidemic of suicide and drug abuse, 18-year-old girls selling their bodies on the internet, multinational corporations doing whatever they want without any consequences, foreign nationals buying our farmland and running our Congress, which I would point out first and foremost, this is not libertarianism. If the private corporations are running the Congress, it's not libertarianism. It's a crony system, basically, of democracy as a face to impose the force of the state, which serves the corporation. It's our current system, but it's not libertarianism. He says, I don't know what libertarians cry about all the time. We're living their vision right now. This is what end-stage cultural libertarianism looks like. Liberty without morality is degenerate, sinful slavery, and the wages of sin is death. The only true liberty is found in Jesus Christ, which is why when we take power, the cultural libertarianism ends and the state will be wielded to enforce and legislate biblical morality. And my comment to him was, no, we don't live in a libertarian world, because much of what you described is imposed without fair competition by the force of the state. Much of the drag queen story hour are held in public libraries and schools. Much of the 18-year-old e-tots are tapping into a celibacy market opened up by the state's attack on marriage and the family. In a libertarian world, the problems you describe would affect a couple of weirdos, would lead to their self-destruction, and we would all laugh about it. We have to be careful in thinking that we can recreate an artificial America being great again in a kind of bubble of control. We can't. America was great because it was formed by people who have naturally and self-selected in a way as to converge toward Christianity. If you just take Christianity and you reimpose it by force on the current demographics of America, you get absolutely nothing. It's the same question of, in general, is it a correlation or a causation? Are people who get out of university performing well on the job market because the university taught them something? Or is it because they got selected for high intelligence at the entrance of university? You know, am I changing something by imposing a social program and cultural program onto people? Or is it the case that the greatness of the past, the greatest of the past of America, was due to the fact that it was founded by a good demographic that naturally converged toward Christianity, naturally converged toward imposing some sort of social decorum and cultural mores? I believe that the second answer is the case. I believe that if you take Christianity and you impose it on today's America, you'll get nothing from it. You'll only get more, if it becomes punishable to not adhere to certain features of Christianity, all you're going to end up with is people finding different ways to look Christian but not be Christian for real. You're going to have more hypocrisy, more subversive behavior. But you cannot impose morality by force. Morality comes and develops as a natural product of a demographic. And the conception that Christianity is associated with goodness is really due down below in the causal structure to the fact that the American people was great. It was formed by a great demographic. And that's what led to a lot of success being attributable to Christianity. It's important that Torba gets this right and that we get this right as a society, because if we start modifying the world and thinking that we're fixing it, we're going to be deluding ourselves into thinking that we're winning. You could have a charismatic figure rise in America and lead people to believe that they are the right one to reimpose Christian order onto America. But if you don't do the work at the demographic level that should accompany this, then your project will be doomed to fail. Because America filled with Hispanics and Blacks who would have adhered to a white conception of Christianity is still a Hispanic and Black America. and they will still have behaviors, although they will adhere to whatever you need to state to look Christian and look like you've integrated the Christian lifestyle. They will end up having the behaviors that are associated with their race, and they will interact with religion in the way that their genes and their demographic pushes them to. Silver Spider says, Jeff, but Christians will never get this. They believe more in changing the soul over genes. Yes, and they're wrong, which is why, I mean, it's an uncomfortable place for me to be, because I know that I'm very popular with Christians. I mean, the kind of things I say is too shocking for the liberal leftist. And so a lot of my crowd, a lot of the potential people who could be interested in this show are Christians. And so standing as an atheist in this already niche positioning is certainly not monetarily rewarding for me. But I have to tell Christians the truth. Your project, your belief that the Bible and whatever set of cultural memes you want to associate with Christianity, the belief that you can impose this on other people who are fundamentally different people, who have evolved with different evolutionary histories, is bound to fail. You're going to fail as much as the, you know, these pastors and priests who were going in faraway lands trying to convert very different people to the religion. It's not going to work. Proselytism doesn't work. Sometimes it works in appearance, because sometimes the people that you try to dominate will be able to display an adherence to your religious principles. But they are always a different people, and their interests evolutionarily are always fundamentally misaligned with yours. Which is why imposing some French culture or aspects of French religions to North Africa has never led a Paris to be born in North Africa. You still have a bunch of countries today that you can go to where people will speak French. Tunisia, Morocco, and you'll get there and you'll see that there has been an impact of French culture. But you're never going to get the developments that are associated with being a Western nation. And that's because the calculation that Christians make, that Jesus equals 100%, and if you accept Jesus, then you're my brother, is false. It's missing a part of the equation. Western Europe equals Western Europeans plus Christianity. And you cannot forget the Western European part. You cannot pull it out of this. You cannot go on with Christianity only without the Western European. All right, so that was my answer to Andrew Torba. I would love to interact with Andrew Torba on this. I'd like to hear what he has to say, because I think he's very sensitive to the reality of the racial of races existing, and races matter. But I think he's unable to apply this thing that he knows. I think he's unable to apply it when it comes down to Christianity and Jesus Christ. I think that there's something in his brain that goes off and that kind of obfuscate this biological reality when he thinks of Jesus Christ. Because I don't know if Andrew Torba understands, but an African or a Chinese person or even a North African or a Middle Eastern person who would state that they accept Jesus Christ would not be the same as a Western European. Jesus Christ is not everything. There's a legitimate question about if it's anything, about whether it did contribute to Western Europe. I think it must have to some extent, because there was such a cultural shift that may have had evolutionary significance for Western Europe and that may have led to its success. So whether Christianity is a part of the ingredients of a good nation makes no doubt to me. There's a good case for it at least. But the idea that it's all is not true to me. The IRS is coming for your Venmo income. Entrepreneurs and small business owners who use services such as Venmo, PayPal, eBay, and Airbnb are about to find their digital payments facing more scrutiny. This is the history of humanity. The libertarians, the innovators try to flee the world. They try to flee other people. We have fled to the internet, us, autists of the early internet. And now the IRS is coming, of course. They're going to get systematic reports from Venmo saying, hey, you know, this guy sent $30 to this guy. And they're going to ruin a whole generation of economic tools. And eventually the autists of the internet will converge toward crypto. And then they're going to do the same to Bitcoin. And then they're going to run toward other crypto. It's always like this. There's always a fleeing away from the mechanism of society that are trying to collect and to scratch every little bit that they can scratch back. Todd Criminal sends a link to Oom's Clannishness, the series, a finer grained look at how it happened. Okay, I'll keep this link in my bookmarks, but I don't have time to read it tonight. Healthy young people are dying suddenly and unexpectedly from a mysterious syndrome. I have an hypothesis. As doctors seek answers to a new national register. This is fascinating because if they really do this new national register, they might end up finding the one answer that they don't want to hear. They might turn up, you know, being faced with data that is so stunning that they would conclude, all right, we have to acknowledge that somehow this mysterious cause, this black box mysterious cause, seems statistically related somehow to a vaccine that is entirely safe. There is some interaction between the cause and the vaccine that's entirely safe and that has only very rare side effects. It's like, even this article at the Daily Mail, the word vaccine, I control-deft it. The word vaccine does not appear in the whole article. And someone was pointing out on Twitter a long time ago, but they were featuring that tweet on another article. Someone was pointing out on Twitter that sudden infant death syndrome became a thing in the very decade that vaccination became a kind of standard in children, and that now we have the adult, they call it sudden adult death syndrome, SADS, as a parallel to SIDS, the sudden infant death syndrome. And somehow in the same year that people have been obligated and forced to take the vaccine, somehow they come with this term, which has been trending on Google on November 2021, which is now getting covered by mainstream media. Somehow this term rises on the very year where we have forced people to take a vaccine that wasn't tested for a long time before we forced people. VPN detection service tells US Copyright Office to make VPN detection tools mandatory to fight geo-piracy. So that's Reclaim the Net, always concerned about the freedom on the internet. And this would suck. You know how sometimes you end up on YouTube or some other site and they say, this content has been barred in your country. And then so you connect to a VPN so that your computer appears to come from whatever country they serve it in, and then you can watch it. Well, now they want a whole federal mechanism that would that would force it would force a platform like YouTube to have a VPN detection tool. So if you are on a VPN, they would refuse to send you a video. That's extremely sad. I hope that ultimately there's so much bureaucracy of that kind that comes to affect the mainstream platforms that people just naturally converge to stuff like Odyssey. Ultimately, it will depend on how annoying they're willing to be, and eventually it will be so annoying that people are just going to naturally flock here. Joe Biden jokes about sending political opponents to jail less than 12 hours before his FBI raids home. His FBI raids home of Michigan gubernatorial candidate for attending the January 6th rally. This is quite shocking. They've done the same to our friend Augustus Sol Invictus, you know. Somehow, when he was presenting himself as a candidate for the Republican Party, somehow there's false allegations that rise against him and they get him in jail. This case is a Republican candidate in Michigan, so to take the position of Gretchen Whitmer as a governor. And somehow this guy gets arrested for January 6th involvement. His involvement being that he's been standing outside the Capitol that day. This is an attack on their political opponent. It's an attack on liberty and freedom of speech and freedom of thought in America. There's the Navarro case, which is also the same. It's Navarro being a loyal follower of Donald Trump who had been working with Trump. And as the Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack prepares to stage a show trial of Donald Trump on Capitol Hill this week, I have filed a lawsuit challenging the Select Committee's gross violations of the Constitution's separation of powers. Yes, congressional committees do have the power to investigate, yet they can only do so in pursuit of a legislative function, for instance, to enact new rules, regulations, or policies. What settled law explicitly rules out is the pursuit of a judicial function, in which a congressional committee seeks to act as judge, jury, and executioner that clearly violates the separation of powers. Punishment is reserved exclusively for the judicial branch. I think that's a very important argument, and I think this should win in court. If the courts cannot be too biased, I think this is a very good argument. What's happening with the January 6th committee is a political process, and it's a mock judiciary process. And it's true, it's not their function. Their function would be, it's like when you do a committee hearing, you welcome experts and you ask them, how could we make the law better? But that's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to make it look like they're finding Donald Trump guilty of insurrection. So I think, I would hope that this case gets to the Supreme Court and that the Supreme Court says, yes, you know, you've been stepping over the boundary here. A last news item before we end the show. Bye, Felicia. Washington Post fires triggered reporter over public spat. The Washington Post has reportedly fired journalist Felicia Sanmez after a week of infighting between reporters that aired the Post's dirty laundry in front of the world. The Washington Post is they're always in trouble. There's always a kind of triggered journalist, leftist journalist, some who are making the Washington Post look bad. Sun Mez, who was previously suspended for dancing on Kobe Bryant's grave, and then went on to sue the paper in a now dismissed lawsuit, claiming that she faced job discrimination after going public with her claim to have been sexually assaulted, was fired after stroking heated online arguments between reporters over the paper's new policy on social media. The dramatics started after journalist David Weigel retweeted a sexist joke which read, "Every girl is bi, you just have to figure it out if it's parlor or sexual." Sun Mez tweeted an image of Weigel's tweet saying, "Fantastic to work at a news outlet where retweets like this are allowed." Listen, woman. You've been forcing yourself into the Washington Post. They didn't want you. You made all sorts of arguments around, "Oh, I'm a victim of sexual assault, I'm being discriminated against." So you end up at the Washington Post. And then you complain, "Oh no, I'm working at a place that accepts guys like this." Well, in other words, you are an imperialistic job grabber. You want to grab the job for you, you believe you're the only person who deserves it, and you want to kick other people out because you don't like them. Well, it's a good thing that she's been fired. An excellently good thing. I'm super happy. We have to start looking at these people who are troubled in the workplace and never satisfied. Just get the fuck out. You're generating so much problems for the company. You're a risk. You're a walking risk because you're associating the Washington Post with your radical leftist view. She lost her job, and that's perfect. Lapitop says, "The problem of the tragedy of the commons is one problem with libertarianism, also Matthew's principle." Yes, and that's why I'm for suspending the libertarian's principle for a small state. I'm totally fine with there being a small state as long as it's limited in its scope and growth, and its function is declared as the application of the libertarian philosophy, the insurance that there's no crime that would go against the libertarian philosophy, and also a clear statement in the Constitution that explains that this government is not to grow into a tool for redistribution. So it's not because you're a libertarian that you have to fully adhere radically to the idea of libertarianism. You can say, "All right, I acknowledge that for the application of the law and for perhaps even the army, the libertarian solution doesn't seem readily available. So let us just pause our libertarian principle and agree on a very small government that would do just these two things." Nicholas Petris says, "JF, very excellent improvements on minimizing audible coughs and throat clearing. We thank you." Well, it's that the throat clearing have become rare enough that I can pause. But the throat clearing at every 2 minutes, it was hard for me to catch them and to truly mute. But now that I have like one throat clearing or two per episode, I can think about it and stop it. Some random bloke says, "Hey Jay," he sends a super chat, "Thank you so much for supporting the show. Hey JF, do you know Michael Woodley of Many? He does intelligence research and race. New York Times just wrote a hit piece on him, linking him to the Buffalo shooter. Watch out." I know Michael Woodley. We've had some interactions because wasn't he the guy who was complaining that I'm not in the groove of group selection and I have to move with the times? Well, fuck him. Fuck him for this ridiculous argument. Like, JF, group selection is trendy. Come party with us. What the fuck is this? But yeah, I think it's great. He pursues interesting questions at times. But if I properly remember, he's the one hanging out with Ed Dutton and thinking that group selection is a thing and that it explains all sorts of things. It's too bad because it tarnishes so much of his work. Like, okay, there are questions of intelligence and evolution that are worth asking. But if you ask them through the lens of group selection, you're losing your time. You are completely wasting your time. Russia Today, perhaps a last news item. Pentagon divulges number of US-funded biolabs in Ukraine. US insists 46 peaceful facilities were all about public health and safety. Entirely peaceful virus work for the purpose of public health. Thank you.